6 seconds to go. Comes in to Tucker. Ewing sets a screen. The shot is off. Loose ball. Ewing goes up. The basket counts.
Everybody, to another episode of Strick and Roll. I'm your host, Shwini Poo, and this is episode 20. I am joined by a first-time guest of the pod. His name is Bibbs. That's at Bibbs Corner on Twitter. He is one half of the Mavs Outsiders podcast. Bibbs, happy to have you on. I'm thinking and hoping that this is a better interaction than our first one on Twitter, but happy to have you on, man. How are you doing?
Oh man, I'm pretty good. Better than the Mavs offseason, I'll say that. I mean, you guys are having a pretty good one though, so I imagine you're doing pretty good as well.
I'm doing well. We'll see. I don't know. I'm not as in love with going all in on Donovan Mitchell, but okay. We can talk a little bit about that later. But before we get started, I have to make an announcement that the Strickland has a Patreon. You can subscribe to it. There are a number of tiers. There's a $6 tier that gets you access to Pod Strickland every Friday that I do with Prez. You also get access to the Strickland Discord, where the conversation never stops. And it certainly hasn't stopped over the last day since Shams very kindly dropped that bomb on us at 11:40 p.m. last night. There's another tier. There's a $9 tier that gets you access to this pod right here, Strick and Roll, my solo pod, where I rant, yell, rave about the Knicks even more than I already do. You also get access to wonderful weekly articles by Jack Huntley and Matthew Miranda, two of the best in the business. There are even further tiers beyond that. There's a $15 tier, $30 tier, $50 tier, and $100 tier. Those come with a variety of additional benefits like live watch parties, merchandise discounts, listening in on pod recordings, and even potentially co-hosting a podcast alongside yours truly one day. Whether you choose to subscribe or not, none of this would be possible without you. So without further ado, let's get started. All right, look, I think you're a Mavs fan. I think there's only one obvious place to start, and that's Frank Ntilikina. Jalen Brunson obviously leaves Dallas, signs the Knicks 4 years, $104 million. Let's go back a little bit. The Mavs have this awesome playoff run. And I'll be completely honest with you. I thought when the playoff draw opened up, I was like, all right, yeah, they can beat Utah for sure. I actually liked you guys in that series.
Right.
But then it was Luka was going to be out for a few games. Brunson blows up, right? You guys go up 2-1.
Yeah.
And then Luka comes back and you make this run all the way to the Western Conference Finals. And, you know, there are ups and downs, but I thought, in large part, Luka is obviously by far the best player on the team. But I was like, okay, Brunson, that's a hell of a run. Like, he's earned himself a little payday. Did you think at that point that even if another team came in and offered something like $400 million, that the Mavs would do whatever they could to keep him? Or were you expecting like, hey, look, if the Knicks come in with all the fucking connections he's got there, this is a thing that could just, you know, he's going to leave.
So I'm going to be honest. I'm very different than a lot of Mavs fans. The podcast is the Mavs Outsiders, and I offer an outsider's perspective. I'm not as wrapped up in the goings on in Dallas. I'm a basketball fan first, and when we drafted Brunson, I was disappointed because we drafted two point guards. At the time, we still had Dennis Smith, and I was like, you know, what's the long-term plan here? At the time, I wasn't paying attention to the fact that we had made Brunson an unrestricted free agent at the end of his rookie deal. But just watching his game, knowing his game, knowing his ability, because I had him as a mid-lottery type pick or a lottery type pick or like 15, 20, like mid-teens was his grade that I gave him. And I said, just looking at who he is, what I expect him to be, he'll be fine. He'll be a good backup immediately. But he's going to want to run his own show at some point. So all season, that was in the back of my head, is like, he's going to want to run his own show at some point. Like, he's not going to be satisfied with coming back to play off the bench behind Luka. Oh, go ahead.
No. I mean, I was just going to say, like, so like, you know, you've obviously watched him for 3 years before this one. So throughout this year, you were just of the, like, when you were just watching him, did you feel like, okay, like, he's now gotten to a level where not only does he want to run his own show, but he's definitely capable of doing it?
So, and here's the thing. So, again, I, in the back of my head, you know, I always thought he's the type of guy that would eventually want that. What Rick Carlisle did, benching him in the playoffs last year, and keeping him on the bench, and he admitted this when he went on Duncan Robinson's podcast, that it affected his confidence. When Jason Kidd put him in the starting lineup, I think that was the first attempt to try to say, like, hey, look, you can stay here and things can be great. Like, you can play with Luka. And that the side angle that did is it allowed him the opportunity to grow his confidence and prove that he could be that type of guy. Luka was out for a while and he kept us in every single game. We didn't win as many, but he kept us in the games. Like, we went to the wire against the Suns twice with no Luka in the regular season. The next piece of that was what teams were going to have money. So the team that we were watching the whole season was probably the Pistons. And I didn't think he was good enough to be a starter on a playoff team, but I thought he was good enough to be a starter on a bad team like the Pistons if they threw a bag at him. So that idea was always there before the playoffs.
Okay. But the playoffs did, like, change. Did that change what you thought of what he was capable of as a player?
I've always been high on him. I compared him to Kyle Lowry coming out. I've always thought he could be a Kyle Lowry type of guy. I watched him in college, and it's not just the reason I had him as a mid-teens type of player in his draft class was because, no, he doesn't look like the prototypical NBA point guard that you want, like a superstar, but he does everything right. He can score at all three levels. He's a leader. He's poised. And he got the opportunity to show that in the playoffs. He got the opportunity to show that in the regular season. So the pool of teams that would be interested in getting him grew, in my opinion, in the playoffs. So yeah, it was always in the back of my head that if he had an opportunity to go be the lead ball handler somewhere, that he would definitely take it. And I do think he's the type of guy, again, I don't know if he's going to be an all-star, but he's the type of guy that can run a show somewhere for sure.
Yeah. And I mean, the thing so again, like, this is full disclosure. Anybody listening to this would already know this. I personally was like, I like Jalen Brunson. Right. I think he's a good player. I think he's going to help the Knicks. I personally just thought they should not run it back. That's the wrong way to put it. I thought they should give Emmanuel Quickley a shot at running point guard next year, starting point guard. But at the same time, like, not choosing not to do that,
right,
and going out and signing Jalen Brunson, and I don't think the contract is, I'm fine with it. Have not thought it's like a big, huge crisis or anything. I'm fine with that because what Jalen Brunson is he is one of the most efficient 2-point scoring guards in the NBA. And the Knicks finished 30th in 2-point field goal percentage last year. Oh, wow. I think they finished 29th the year before. So they're a terrible team scoring inside the arc. He is literally one of the best in the league at it. So, you know, whatever you think about the kind of the contract and the asset allocation of it all, like, fine, but he's going to help the team on the court. So I was okay with that piece of it.
Okay.
And I think he's a really good player. You know, in 17 games this year without Luka on the floor, he put up 20.4 points, 7.5 assists, 4 rebounds. I did a little thread on this the other day, but his efficiency stayed high all year without Luka on the floor. Mm-hmm. That's not to say, obviously, like, he's not, I mean, it's different to do that for 82 games versus right, to do that for 17 and to do it in spot minutes when Luka's sitting on the bench. But, like, there is a player there. I think there's upside there given kind of you watch the Warriors series, I'm sure, where they kept going under all the screens and daring him to take pull-up threes, and that's like something that he's, it's kind of funny because he's hesitant to take those, but if you put him like 2 feet inside the arc, he's like, yeah, I'll take that all day. Like, he's like very comfortable taking that shot.
That was definitely a frustration for me, for sure.
Oh yeah, I believe it. And I just think like that's the step. Like if he makes that step, you know, with his bag, like it's kind of funny because I think because he went to Villanova for 3 years, he's a second round pick, and like he's more of a ground bound player for as good as a finisher as he is. He's obviously not a high flyer. Right. Like, I don't think people, I really think people have this idea of him as like this very, very kind of methodical, and he is methodical, but like a very textbook, like solid. And he's like if you watch his, you know, watch him play highlights, games, whatever, he's pretty saucy with his handle. Yeah. And so like the Knicks have not had anybody like Derrick Rose obviously does, but you know, he's older now. You can't really depend on that, but like they've not had a starting guard capable of really like dancing on guys the way that Brunson can. And you know, that is its own element that they've been missing. So it's just like, it's really impressive to see the growth he's made as a player. But because one of the concerns I had with him coming out of college, I remember, was like so much of his offense at Villanova, they used to use him in the post a ton.
Yeah.
And I know he still has the post game, but like, I was like, there's no way an NBA team is going to, you know, have like 10 plays a game for this guy in the post. Like, what's he going to do? And it's just like really crazy to see how much his game has grown even from then.
No, 100%. And I think, you know, it's funny, like when you look at the numbers, he's like, I think top five paint scoring or something like that. he's a sturdy guy. He can back down smaller guys. But the bigger part of that is that he's comfortable in traffic, in the paint, in and around bodies. Like you mentioned the methodical dribble or the ball handling. Like, he's not the fastest guy, but he's crafty, he's smart. He knows how to use his body angles. He knows how to manipulate the defender. Like, those little things, like, again, it's not the sexiest all the time for a highlight package, but, you know, he knows what he's doing with the ball. He's not out there dribbling off his leg. He knows how to get where he wants to go. And it's going to be fun for me to see him on another team where he's the primary distributor. I was on with Knicks Fan TV, and they mentioned like the assist situation. Like, he only averaged 4 assists a game this year, blah blah blah. And it's like, and you mentioned he averaged 7 when Luka was out.
Yeah, 7.5. Yeah,
that's about where I'd expect him to be, that 7.5-8 range as the lead ball handler. Like, he has it in him. He just didn't get the opportunity to do it because Luka was there and Luka was doing it. When he got the ball, it was usually because Luka decided he needed the ball at this time, and it wasn't assist time. It was shoot the ball time. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I was actually listening to Locked On Mavericks the other day with Kirk Henderson.
Okay.
And he had, you know, they were doing like a call-in show kind of thing. And
oh, Mavs Moneyball.
Yeah, Mavs Moneyball, yep. And he was talking about... you know, that, yeah, Mavs Moneyball, not Locked On Mavs.
Yeah, I got to make sure I get my guy Kirk his credit.
My bad. But he was talking about how he was convinced when Rick was there that, like, Brunson's lack of assists were because he just didn't see the floor well.
Okay.
And I get, he was talking about how he talked to somebody, I don't even remember who it was, but somebody like even way before was telling him like, no, man, it's Rick. Like, this is Rick. Like, it's not Brunson, it's Rick. Mm. And he was like, yeah. And then you see what he did this year. And he was like, God damn it, it was Rick. and it's like, I guess like, I don't really know what the dynamics were there, but like, what does that mean? Because I mean, just looking at it from the outside in, I mean, there were times Rick had him. He was the backup point guard, right? So I'm assuming he was running the show then. But what does that mean? Like, what was Rick asking of him that, like, that there was this conception of him as kind of like, I don't want to say a Chuck, but that he just lacked vision. And then all of a sudden, kid comes in this year. And, you know, across the board, I feel like there was just a lot more like, holy shit, Brunson's a really solid player, like way better than I even thought he could be.
I think that Rick kind of ruled through fear. He had a very short leash, which made guys who were trying to prove themselves take less risks. And I think Brunson's issue with Rick is that he was scared to attempt certain things for fear of making a mistake and getting pulled out of the game. What I saw with him this year was he relaxed more and he was more comfortable playing loose and free in Kidd's system, because Kidd, surprisingly, I don't know what changed between Milwaukee and now, but he allowed guys to make mistakes. He encouraged them to try things and didn't punish people. And you could see the difference in a lot of players in how they were playing, just not having Rick back there as a drill sergeant. You know, again, this came up in his interview as well with on Duncan Robinson's podcast. You know, I might start one game and I might not play more than 10 minutes for the next five based on how Rick Carlisle's coaching. Like, that didn't happen under Jason Kidd. So I think that the mental aspect of the game is what people don't pay attention to a lot. And I do think that mental aspect is what unlocked Jalen Brunson.
Yeah, that sounds about right. I think Rick Carlisle is a really awesome tactical coach.
Right.
And I would even say, like, he had this weird, I feel like after the title, he was really obsessed with like these three guard lineups all the time. And like, I get it. And he's such a good coach. He could like make it work. But like, it was weird because I always thought in the regular season, he was not nearly as good as he is in the playoffs.
Right.
Because I thought that Clippers series last year, the fact that he even went seven games, I know like Dallas goes up 2-0 and then obviously they lose four of the last five. But like, for that to even go seven, given the kind of significant talent difference, I think between those two teams when they're healthy, was like, wow, that was really impressive from Rick. And, you know, he caught a lot of shit for, maybe not from all corners, but he did catch some shit for kind of like telling Porzingis, like, dude, I don't care that you want to post up. Like, you're going to go stand in the corner and take threes, because that's what we think is the best thing for this offense. And I know that was definitely like a struggle, but I 100% think he was absolutely right. And, you know, whatever the case is, I just think, look, the guy's there for what? He was there for 15 years, whatever the fuck it is. Like,
too long.
It's time for a new voice. And I think, to Kidd's credit, you know, I don't want to go into any of the off-the-court stuff because that's its own thing. But, like, as far as his development as a basketball coach, I was really impressed with what I saw this year, because all the stuff with him from Milwaukee was like, you know, he is this lunatic disciplinarian,
right,
you know, super control freak. And, you know, I've talked about this with Tibbs, but like, one of the things that impressed me that Kidd actually did is he went and he worked on somebody else's staff. You know, like, he humbled himself. He went to LA. He sat on, you know, Lawrence Frank's staff for however many years he was there, 2 or 3 years. And obviously at first there was this entire thing like, oh, he's just there to like, he's going to beat Littlefinger and stab him in the back and like take the job. But like, he actually, I think, embraced the role he was in and learned from it,
right,
you know, like, see how another coach handles things and learn from that situation yourself. And obviously the fact that he's dealing with really big personalities in LA with like LeBron and Anthony Davis, right? So it's like, these are like really valuable experiences for you as a coach. And I just think he took a lot of that with him to Dallas. And then you watch kind of like, he gets this incredible buy-in defensively. By the way, like, the Knicks kicked the shit out of the Mavericks twice, and I've tweeted about it like multiple. After each game, I was just like, look, I obviously Dallas is doing something very, very right because they're really good this year on defense especially, but like, I have no idea how this team is a top 10 defense. But it's like, just to get the buy-in he got from really the whole group, and get them to committed to executing their scheme. And then I think his willingness to just be like, we don't have any good bigs on this roster. Fuck trying to like pretend like we do. Let's go five out and just embrace that entirely.
Yeah.
Like, I thought he did. He got everything you could not get more out of this team than he did.
Facts.
Yeah. So I just thought he did a really good job this year. And I do have a, we'll get into their offseason, because I have, obviously, even beyond the Brunson thing, I have some real questions about what they've done. but are there things that you feel like with Brunson there, obviously there was with him and then obviously Luka, and then you add Dinwiddie at the deadline. Like, I've seen this notion of like, well, Tim Hardaway Jr. is going to be back, and I like Tim. He's a solid player. He's not, and he can score, but he's not going to score at all in the same ways that Brunson is.
Right.
Like, is that something that you're really concerned about?
You gave me a lot. I want to go back to the Rick Carlisle piece that you mentioned. Mm-hmm. I'll make it quick. You mentioned that you felt like he was kind of a bad coach in the regular season, and then he would turn it on in the playoffs. And that's 100% what the experience was. It felt like he was experimenting during the regular season. Like, he would just put something out there and see what happens. And then playoffs would come, and he'd have all the data to know what was going to work and what wasn't. People were pissed that he played Boban in the Clippers series. But if he doesn't play Boban, I don't think either one of those series, the one in the bubble or last year, go 6 or 7 games. Like, Boban was the second most valuable player, in my opinion, on the court, which is just weird to say for a guy that barely ever plays, whether he should or shouldn't. But that was Rick Carlisle, and he didn't care about your feelings. Like you said, told KP to go stand his ass in the corner.
I respect that. Like, that's how you deal with KP.
It's like, KP, you're in here, you're killing us, man. Just go stand over there, man. Just go. Like, I don't care if it hurts your feelings. Like you said, I respect that too. At the same time, he benched Jalen Brunson. He killed his confidence. Like, when you do that to young players that are trying to make their name, it's bad. And that's why I wanted him gone, because we had a lot of young players. I didn't need a guy like Rick Carlisle destroying them all. Kid, like you said, he came in, he was a completely different person. I made the joke that, you know, I don't know if they gave him some happy pills somewhere, or it's just the humble pie was so good, but he's a completely different person than he was going Milwaukee and Brooklyn. Like, everything I heard was terrible from Brooklyn and Milwaukee. Everything I saw was terrible as far as his management of people. And what he was a completely different person this year. The Zen master. I mean, not Zen master. He was just so calm and happy. Like, I don't know what happened, but I'll take it. I was very critical of the hire initially. I hate recycled coaches. I would prefer to give, like, people new chances. But
did you want Jamal Mosley?
I did. I was big on Mosley. I felt like he had the relationship with Luka already. The relationship with the guys, and I wanted to give a young coach a chance.
So you must have been really happy with how Rick handled that entire situation.
No, that was disgusting to me. Like, that was, I mean, I'm glad Mosley, he landed somewhere, he got a job. Seems like Orlando's giving him a chance to build with those young guys, so maybe it was good for him to get out of the Mavs organization. But Rick Carlisle, that whole situation, I'm just Donnie Nelson, all that, I'm glad it's done. Like, we can move forward. When people bring it up, I say, hey, that was your ex, let it go. Like, we're moving forward from here on out. I almost forgot what your final question was.
Like the Brunson piece of him, and
Tim Hardaway Jr. So part of the reason I'm not stressed over Brunson leaving is because I didn't feel he was the long-term fit next to Luka. Re-signing him for me would have been re-signing him to trade him later to get the appropriate guy next to Luka. The pretending like Tim Hardaway Jr. is an off-season addition is pissing me off from the front office. Just going to keep that 100. That's one of the talking points they keep repeating.
Yeah, Rick, I saw Cuban had this whole thing of like, we can replace Brunson scoring easily.
Yeah.
It's like, all right, buddy. Good luck with that.
First of all, Tim Hardaway Jr. is incredibly inconsistent. He was playing like complete ass before he went down with the injury. It's like, let's not pretend that didn't happen. He can't handle the ball. He's not playmaking. If he gets the ball, he's shooting it 90% of the time. Defended by three men or not, the ball's going up. when it hits his hands most of the time.
Oh, yeah.
There's value in that, but I don't like that we're going in right now. We're going into the season with Luka and Spencer Dinwiddie as the only dependable ball handlers.
Do you think, so I'm just looking at his numbers right now. So the 2 years before this one, so 2019-20, 2021, he shot, just doing it right now. He had 44, 39 and a half splits from the field. And he averaged just over 16 points per game. He was at 58 and a half true shooting. And then this year, he goes to, 14 points per game. He's shooting 39 and a half, 33 and a half splits from the field, and 52 true shooting. Do you think that he's a guy that maybe benefited more from Carlisle's kind of like very regimented offense, whereas Kidd definitely gives his guys more license to do shit? And I feel like Tim, like, look, I experienced it in New York, right? Because he has like a couple of really good years in Atlanta, right? Where it looks like he's bounced back and really built himself back up. Right. And he comes to New York, and he actually had a really good first season, I thought, in New York with under Jeff Hornacek, who, you know, was not an amazing coach or anything, but had gave him a more defined role, didn't have him just freelancing all the time. Right. And then he gets fired, and we bring in Fizdale, and Fizdale is like the ultimate fucking ball don't stop coach, just, you know, rolls the ball out there, is happy for guys to ISO endlessly nonstop if they want. And like Tim's numbers plummet, and then obviously he gets traded with Kristaps, right, in that big deal. But like I saw that. So is that something like with Tim that like does that make sense? Is no, that kind of like maybe what happened?
Yeah, I think you kind of nailed it. And it was funny because I talked about Rick tinkering, and that year, I think Tim started off the bench, and he would come in off the bench and be firing away. Like, you couldn't control him from firing away. So then Rick puts him in the starting lineup with Luka. Jalen Brunson was quicker to give the ball up than Luka's going to give the ball up. So Tim was only getting the ball when it was time to shoot. And when he was in the best position to shoot. It wasn't just, I need to get the ball out of my hands now, I'm giving it to Tim, and then Tim decides to shoot. It was, okay, Tim, here's the ball, shoot it. And his numbers went through the roof because Luka was, him being on the court with Luka contained when he got the ball to the time when he was supposed to have it. And I mean, I've talked about it on the timeline. I was joking. I was like, we had to handcuff Tim Hardaway Jr. by playing him with Luka and with Luka only. Like, if Luka's not on the court, he's throwing up bullshit. But when Luka's on the court, he's shooting the right shots. And then with Kidd, I think Tim, like you said, just got a little bit too loose again and was firing up these crazy shots all over the place before the injury. I do fear what the plan is right now, because the last thing I heard is that the Mavs are planning to start Luka and Spencer together, which means there's a strong opportunity that Tim Hardaway Jr. is going to spend some time, a lot of time, on the court without Luka. And yeah, I don't need that again.
Yeah, and I want to touch a little bit on this because, look, I'll say this about Brunson. I agree with you. I don't think, in just like, if you're just looking at it in terms of long-term basketball team building, I don't know if Brunson was going to be there long-term. What sucks for the Mavericks is you lose the asset entirely. Right. Now, like, you didn't get anything for him, right? They couldn't even figure out a fucking sign-in trade to have a traded player exception for Mark Cuban to not use. my theory is that Mark Cuban didn't want to have that so that fans wouldn't get pissed when he didn't use it anyway, because he's being super cheap. But, like, that's the part that, like, I don't know. I've seen enough from Mavs fans where it's like, this was my thinking all year, because people were like, well, the Mavs can give him the fifth year, and Cuban hasn't paid the tax in 10 years, and like, you know, they're making this run to the Western Conference Finals. He's going to pay the tax. He's going to pay up for Brunson. He's going to keep him. And I was just like, dude, I don't think he is. Like, as soon as that trade happened at the deadline, they trade Kristaps for Dinwiddie and Bertans. I was like, part of this is getting rid of Kristaps for sure, but part of this is Dinwiddie is a hedge for Brunson. Like, it's absolutely a hedge for Brunson if Brunson walks. And everything as it played out and everything, like, I was just like, he's playing himself into a really nice contract. I know the Knicks are going to throw something at him.
Yeah.
And, you know, like, I just didn't think Cuban had, I don't think he wants to extend himself into the tax. He just doesn't think it's worth it. And he's not going to do it for Jalen Brunson. Like, maybe if it was some more flashy star player or something, he would have done it. But I was like, I just didn't believe it. I just did not believe he was going to do it for Jalen Brunson. And I don't know. Like, as a fan, I would be just furious. Not like, because I, like, what you said is accurate, where it's like, it's not that you wanted to keep him because he was the guy that you were going to, like, it's, you know, Luka and Brunson. Right. Like, that's the duo. But it's like, okay, but now you have Brunson. Once you give this next pick to the Knicks, now you have your 25, your 27. Like, what can Brunson in those picks? Like, does that get you something? You know what I mean? Exactly. Like, there's things you could have, or could you use Brunson to acquire picks, right? Because that's another part of the issue the Mavericks have, is they just don't have a lot of capital to trade. And so, like, that's the shit where if I was a fan, I would just be so pissed about about that situation. And then on top of it, you get the reports of, like, oh, they didn't give him an extension last summer, which he would have signed. And then apparently Rick, I mean, I don't know if this is true or not, obviously, but Rick Brunson claims that he went back to them a month or something before the deadline and was like, look, if that extension's on the table, still we'll take it. And they were like, no, we don't want to give it to you right now. And then as soon as that deadline passes, they're like, oh, yeah, we'll give you this extension. I don't know how true that is, but like, I've seen theories where it's like, look, maybe he's full of shit because Rick is just crazy, but like they literally signed Dorian Finney-Smith to an extension like the second the trade deadline passed. Exactly. So it's like maybe he's probably just like the truth of the situation. So it's like those are things where it's like I don't know if you can blame like Nico Harrison and Kidd or whatever. Like they inherited a not great situation, not in the sense like you have Luka, that's great, but like there's a lot of shit to clean up and the cap was out of control and there's all these weird expenses going on. Like I don't want to kill them for that, but like I just think the Brunson thing, like they completely botched that like really, really bad.
Yeah. So there's a lot of pieces to that. first of all, the Jalen extension thing, I personally thought that he was worth more than the max extension we could have given him, which was like the 4 years, 55. I personally thought he was worth more than that, and I had very little hope in signing him to that deal during the season. Mm-hmm. The reports coming out that he wanted it surprised me for that reason. But then I bring in the Rick Carlisle killing his confidence, him being benched in the playoffs. Maybe he needed that security to feel good about himself. Maybe he was that low on himself that he was willing to accept that at the time. Them coming back to him in January and asking for it also makes sense because, again, it's about security. And the Mavs not giving it to him allegedly was because they wanted to maybe be able to trade him if the right trade came
along. Because if they gave him the extension, then they wouldn't have been able to trade him at the deadline.
Exactly. Yep. And, like, knowing that, if I'm Jalen Brunson, I'm feeling some type of way. Like, I'm coming to you asking to sign this deal for my security, and you're saying no. And I know it's because you potentially want to trade me. So that's a burned bridge, in my opinion. That's to a guy who's going to be an unrestricted free agent, no less. Like, we have, and that's a Donnie Nelson mistake. I can't blame Nico for the fact that Jalen was unrestricted. However,
you know, his agent was Leon Rose when he negotiated that contract. It's like, when I still remember seeing that, I think it might have been a year ago or 2 years ago, because I was like, you know, you're kind of, the Knicks have point guard has been a problem position forever. Oh, yeah. So you're looking at who are guys that maybe we could get. And I just remember like because we had Mitchell Robinson was in the same draft.
Right.
And so we declined his, like the way we structured it, which is what most teams do when you give a second round pick a 4-year contract is you do 3 years guaranteed and you make the fourth year a team option.
Right.
Right. Because if you decline the team option, that player becomes a restricted free agent after 3 years. You have matching rights, blah, 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 blah. We actually declined the team option because he was hurt, and I don't think they felt comfortable giving him a big extension. We obviously agreed to one with him now, so he's back on the team. But like, I remember looking at the Jalen Brunson one, and it was non-guaranteed in the fourth year. And I remember talking to my buddy, and I'm just like, does that mean that he's – I was like, so if they don't guarantee it, does it become restricted? And he was just like, no. And I was like, so – he's unrestricted no matter what they do,
right.
So they'll guarantee it, but like he's still going to be unrestricted after 4 years. He's like, yep, that's basically what it is. And I was just like, wow.
Yeah.
That is an unbelievably terrible contract. Because you, as the team, like you, that's just a situation where it's like, you should never not, it should never not be a team option. You know what I mean? Like,
exactly.
There's no way the agent should win that piece of the negotiation.
They have no, what are these going to do? Not let him play? Like,
right, exactly.
That's not what's going to happen. So the fact that they allowed that to occur is just pathetic management. Now, on the back end, like you said, I do believe getting Dinwiddie was a play at security at a bare minimum. Mm-hmm. If Brunson leaves, because again, you know that that's a possibility. And then when it came to the money piece, I don't know that money was a factor here on the back end. I want to believe they would have paid him if they got the opportunity, but my understanding of it is that there was no opportunity. And I'm not surprised. Like, I'm pretty sure he wanted to go. I'm pretty sure he knew he wanted to go for a long time.
I mean, the connections are outrageous, right? It's like his fucking dad is on the coaching staff.
Yeah.
And I mean that part of it, like honestly, I think he would have gone even if that wasn't there. I think it was like he's represented by Sam Rose. His first agent was Leon.
Exactly.
Leon is his fucking godfather.
Exactly.
Literally his godfather. Like
is it tampering if it's just family dinner? Like,
yeah, exactly. It was just like one of those things where the only way I saw it was like, look, you have a year like the Mavericks had, right? And he's been there for 4 years. Luka is amazing, a generational player. Like, that's a situation where maybe it's just like, why would I leave this? You know, like, yeah. But I, to your point, like, I think the fact that he knew if I signed this contract, whatever contract they gave him, right? Let's say the Dallas matched the number the next game,
right?
He would know. Because they showed him at the deadline, he knows that he's trade bait.
Exactly.
Like, that's what he is to them. So, like, why would I go there when I can go and I can go back to where I'm from for the team that I grew up rooting for, to play for my dad and my godfather and, like, all of these connections I have there.
And control my destiny.
Right. And, like, I'm at the very least, like, if there's a team where he has a chance of never getting traded, it's probably this one. Right, yeah. Like, pretty good chance, or at least there is a chance of that. And I just think, you know, for him, it was probably just like, you know, the fact that you guys even, like you said, it's, I mean, I was watching, so the Knicks played tonight, Summer League or whatever,
right.
But they were talking about the DeAndre Ayton entire thing, and it was funny, right, because it was like, they're talking about the contract, and then halfway through the second quarter, they're like, well, the contract's been matched, like, it's going back to Phoenix. But Sam Mitchell was on the broadcast, and he's like, look, like, I'm sure DeAndre Ayton's happy he got the money, and maybe in time he's going to be happy going back to Phoenix. But he was like, you're going to feel some type of way about this, because for a month, 2 months, you're hearing about like all the bad things about you as a player, and are you a serious professional, all these kind of things, and then they make you go out on the market, go get a contract, and then they match it, and it's like, why couldn't you just given me the money to begin with, and we could have avoided it. Right, it's not respectful, and I think to a much lesser extent in this scenario, because Dallas did not, to my knowledge at least, I haven't seen any leaks of like, oh, Brunson was actually a gigantic raging asshole.
No, behind the scenes, nothing but nice things to say.
Right. So like, I don't think it's the same thing, but just the idea of like Ayton knows why they matched it. He knows that they matched it because they want to keep him to eventually trade him.
Exactly.
Like, that's what it is. So like, that when the relationship gets to that point, I think it's just really tough. And yeah, I mean, Brunson, like, you know, yeah, the Brunson part of it is what it is. I guess, like, just so they've had, like, I would call Dinwiddie, like, it's not a free agent acquisition, but it kind of was a free agent acquisition the way I think of it.
Okay.
It's like preparation for this upcoming season. So let's say we count him as kind of like a key addition. They make this move at the draft where they package up like all of their bullshit expiring deals and the 26th pick, send it to Houston. They get Christian Wood. My assumption at the time was he was going to start. But then in the immediate aftermath of Brunson agreeing to sign it with the Knicks, the Mavericks go out and they sign JaVale McGee to part of the taxpayer mid-level exception, I believe, that they had. And it's like, then I read this Tim Cato story the other day where JaVale McGee's going to start and Christian Wood's going to come off the bench. And I'm just like, I mean, you talked about the Hardaway coming off the, like, Hardaway and Christian Wood coming off the bench with, like, without, like, a steady veteran point guard to kind of, like, I mean, does that worry you? Because Christian Wood, as it is, like, I know his metrics are all really, really good, right, but a 7-footer with that, those type of positive scoring efficiency metrics and all this kind of stuff that scores in the way he does too, right? He can shoot from three, he can put the ball on the deck. You've got to wonder why, like, he was available in a league that is so obsessed with skilled big guys. Like, I mean, everything about that is a little weird, right?
So there's definitely some personality stuff with Christian Wood that people don't like. Allegedly, that's why it took him so long to even find a NBA home.
Yeah, yeah.
I feel like Kid thinks he can. He's gonna bring you into the kumbaya circle. You're gonna buy in. You're gonna drink the Kool-Aid. Like, everybody's happy. It didn't work on Porzingis, but everybody else is happy there.
I mean, to be fair, I think even Porzingis seemed happier this year with Kidd than he had been at all under Carlisle.
I'm going to be honest. I feel like there was some type of behind-the-scenes agreement that they were going to pump up his value and get a trade for him. And, like, he
did
was
you see
happy with
the
that.
Videos? Did you see the videos of him in Washington after he got traded?
I saw, like, one of him arriving.
He was, like, so happy. I saw an interview with him where he seemed like the happiest guy in the world.
And I'm happy for him. Like, here's the thing. Like, a lot of Mavs fans, and I'm sure you can relate to this as a Knicks fan, because I think that's, like, part of the culture. You want your ex to be miserable. And, like, I can't subscribe to that. Like, did I want KP on the Mavs? No. I said trade him for a bag of chips last summer. And we did that. We traded him for the ghost of Spencer Dinwiddie and Davis making all kinds of money to brick threes Bertans. Like, did Spencer turn into something for us? Yes. We could not have anticipated that, though. And, you know, KP's gone. He's in a better situation for him. So he thinks so far. We'll see how it works out. I can't be mad at that. Like, I'm happy he's gone, but I'm not praying on his downfall, if that makes sense.
The action never ends at DraftKings Sportsbook, especially this summer. With tons of ways to bet on all your favorite sports, you can fuel your fandom and feel the heat of the season like never before. Plus, right now, DraftKings Sportsbook is giving new customers a risk-free bet up to $1,000. That's right. Make your first bet up to $1,000, and if it doesn't win, you'll get another shot to cash in. You can throw down on all the major action for baseball, golf, MMA, and more. Plus, with same-game parlays, spreads, money lines, over-unders, and props, your betting options feel endless. Best of all, DraftKings is safe, secure, and reliable. You can deposit and withdraw your cash whenever you want. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app now. Use promo code TBPN, make your first deposit, and get a risk-free bet up to $1,000. That's promo code TBPN, only at DraftKings Sportsbook. Minimum age and eligibility restrictions apply. See show notes for details. Look, the KP part of it, so much of that stuff was like, the way it ended in New York was really sudden and, you know, like, he's out the door. And the piece of it that really was annoying was like, look, I thought at the time, I said this at the time, I mean, look, you remember this. At the time that trade was made, most people were like, this is an insane trade by the Knicks, and Dallas is, you know, Luka and KP. This is like Steve Nash and Dirk Nowitzki, and like they're going to do it right this time and all this kind of shit. And look, I think Kristaps, the injuries have definitely changed the trajectory of his career. There's no question about it. I think he had it in him to be third best player in a championship team, a Chris Bosh type of player. I wrote that right after the Knicks traded him, that that was the risk, that you're trading a player of this caliber, of this potential caliber, that is like a hall, that's a Hall of Fame player, right? That's a player that helps you win championships. That's a big risk you're taking. I thought it was worth doing because, as you know now from the trade, like there's multiple pieces of it. One was you got out of all of your bad money. You basically erased all of your mistakes. All of your bad money is gone, right? Hardaway is gone. Courtney Lee is gone. Yeah. And the reason I thought that was important was I thought we had already blown our window to build anything around him because of those contracts. Because our cap was like, we had one shot basically, which was that upcoming summer, that 2019 summer, to add pieces of value around KP and whatever was there. And I was like, I just don't like I don't see the window here. I just don't see it. Like, I don't like it. I don't think the odds are good. All we have are our picks. We don't have any extras floating around. Right. So that was another part of it. We got two extra firsts. I was like, okay, this is good. So if all this cap space now that we've cleared out, we've got two extra firsts. And the other part of it was like, we were not on the hook to pay him a fully guaranteed max contract, because the month before he got traded, there was all of this reporting coming out in the local media about like, oh, the Knicks want to keep him, but they want to put injury guarantees on it, and his camp doesn't like that. And I was like, I don't care if his camp doesn't like that. Like, that's I wouldn't give this guy. I'm not going to give him a fully fucking guaranteed max. So coming off an ACL tear, and he had never finished a season at that point. He'd always gotten injured before the end of the season. And so I was just like, I'm good. I'm not going to, you know, I was fine with that trade. Okay. And so.
So you were one of the few, I would say, then, that was okay with it?
I thought it was a good trade. I thought it was a good trade. I didn't like the stuff with his brother was super weird in New York. Right. I thought the way I thought of it was this, was that clearly they made those moves at the time. There's no question about it that, like, yes, some element of it was like inherently clearing out your books and just having a clean cap sheet for once in the history of my entire life as a Knicks fan is a good thing. But there's no question about it, but like that they wanted to get Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving or whatever And so like the way I thought of it was like, okay, even if you don't get Kevin Durant and you don't get Kyrie Irving, you have these extra picks. Now you have all of your own picks. You're going to get a good pick this year, which ended up being RJ Barrett. Even if you don't get these guys, you're in a position now to just kind of like build from the ground up for real. And I just didn't think there was much downside for the Knicks. The downside was all about Kristaps. It wasn't actually about like
exactly
the position of the franchise. So to me, I was like, this is worth it for the Knicks to do. And I didn't actually like it for the Mavericks because of all of the reasons I liked it for the Knicks. Cause I was just like, you don't need to rush any, like you're in good, you have Luka. Like, that's it. You have Luka on a rookie contract. Yeah. That's the fucking sell right there. You don't need to rush anything. You don't need to force it. I compared it at the time. What I said immediately after the trade was, this reminds me of when the Pelicans traded for Jrue Holiday immediately after AD's rookie season. Because it was like, on paper, it makes sense, right? This is a good young guard.
Let's get this guard to go with our big.
Right. It makes sense. But I'm like, you don't need to really rush it at that point. You know, these guys, like, when they're young, they're like, you don't, like, I'm sure Luka wants to win. Everybody knows Luka wants to win. But after his rookie year, you think he gave a shit about, like, oh, I need to make sure, like, they better be making aggressive moves to put all these things. No, after his rookie year, he's probably just like, all right, man, I'm going to go back to Spain, like, hang out by the pool, smoke some hookah, you know? Like, he's not worried about any of that shit.
Like, we got him hostage for 8 years, pretty much.
Yeah. So I was just like, I didn't understand it. But yeah, I mean, that was just like, so much of the bitterness towards KP, to get back to it, was just like, the way it was framed, and especially after they didn't get Durant and Irving, was like, Every time KP had a good game, oh my God, the Knicks gave away this guy for nothing. Oh, they gave him away for nothing. And I'm just like, you can keep saying they got nothing, but like they didn't get nothing. And the one good thing that came out of that offseason was, even though whatever you think about the contracts they signed, they didn't really lock themselves into anything.
Yeah.
So like it gave them now they're kind of locked into multiple contracts and stuff, but they've had cap space or varieties of cap space or been able to open up cap space
exactly
to kind of piece together a team for 3 or 4 years now. And there is value to that. I do think this is a pretty deep roster, even if it doesn't have the top end talent that you need to really win in the NBA. And that's kind of just like the opportunity that arose from the KP deal. So the bitterness of that was mostly like so much of it was just the coverage. And actually, you know, like I've a couple months ago, I was like, you know what, the Knicks, maybe they should trade Julius Randle for Kristaps Porzingis. We could use a stretch five and all this kind of stuff. I actually kind of, I do believe this. I think it would be an interesting homecoming. But like, yeah, I mean, it's just interesting to see how he's ended up now in Washington and whatever the hell is going on there. But like, yeah, I mean, I don't think that at this point, I don't really hate him or anything like that anymore. Okay. There's not, it was like a Mavericks thing, right? Like if he was still on the Mavericks, then it would be like, you know, every time we play, you got to prove that like we won the trade. But now it's just, there's nothing, he's on the Wizards. Like who cares? Right? Just not even the same thing anymore.
It's funny because, you know, Mavs fans, I don't know if we want to be other fan bases. And so we did that with the Knicks, with KP, of course. And I say we, I personally could not, that wasn't a thing for me. The Hawks is another one, like with Trae Young, like, oh, I can't believe y'all gave us Luka, blah, blah, blah. It's like, man, I love Trae. Like, I'm not going to sit here and hate on Trae for no reason. There's plenty of other reasons to hate on him, which I do, but not, it has nothing to do with that trade. That was one of the most even trades of all time, in my opinion. Everybody got what they needed or what they wanted out of that, in my opinion. With the KP stuff, and I think the biggest, and I said this, but this was our first interaction here, it was like the KP trade in and of itself wasn't the problem. It was everything that happened after that. It was trading Harrison Barnes for Justin Jackson to get more cap space. And then in the open of free agency, instead of using the cap space that you created to sign other players to go along with Luka and KP, they legit put their phones away and had wine and dine KP and went to the media like, this is our big fish. Like Mark Cuban wanted so bad to be able to say that he got a big fish after 9 years of failure that he wined and dined a guy that was already on his goddamn roster while Malcolm Brogdon and other guys were signing with other teams. It was the most pathetic display I've ever seen. And then once we lock KP in, we can't spend any money. So what did we accomplish at the end of the day?
Yeah, that was a weird one too. And it's like, I loved the Seth Curry contract. And then a year later, we traded him. Yeah, it was like that trade. I never understood it.
Stupid. Curry is a guy who chose to come to us and perform.
And he's awesome. He's awesome with guys. Like he's one of those players in the NBA. There's not a single player that you could be like, oh yeah, no, Seth can't play with him.
Right.
Like that lineup doesn't work. There's no player he doesn't play well with. And it's that was crazy to deal that one. And for what did you even get? You got a second round. Yeah.
Second round pick that turned into Tyler Bay, who was waived the same year. So Josh Richardson experiment failed miserably, and Tyler Bay is no longer a Dallas Maverick. It's like, so we gave away Seth Curry for absolutely nothing. Again, a guy who wanted to be there. I don't buy jerseys. I had a Seth Curry jersey. Like, I just knew he was staying. I could not believe the trade. He was in the bubble going crazy, like talking crazy to Paul George. You know, he's married to Paul George's ex. And Paul George did her dirty. Like, he was talking crazy to Paul George. I just knew he was a Maverick for life. And then we traded him, in my opinion, to have a chance at some more cap space later. I don't understand our management side. I'm trying to give Nico a blank slate, but I feel like the Mark Cubanisms are rubbing off on him too. And that Tim Hardaway Jr. is like adding a free agent line that he dropped at Summer League is the first sign of that. Like, that's the kind of crap that Mark Cuban tries to spew and spin to make us feel like we did something when we didn't.
Yeah, I mean, the cap space stuff with the Mavericks is, like, legendary at this point. Where, and look, I'm a Knicks fan, so I'm, you know, I've experienced all kinds of, like, yeah, this is the year. This is the time. We're going to get LeBron this time, for sure.